Welcome to Harmonious Workplaces, a podcast about corporate culture, organizational change management, and workplace behavior. Harmonious Workplaces was started by independent consultants Rich Cruz, Ben Kleinman, and Cheryl Volpe to explore, challenge, and build on various organizational culture and change management concepts. It's a blend of theory and practice based on their personal and professional experiences working with companies of all sizes across various industries. If you own a business, lead a team, want new ideas about the corporate environment, or just want to listen to a group of consultants talking about how to make work more enjoyable, we invite you to sit back, relax, and dive in with us to Harmonious Workplaces.
Ambiguity. For some people, it's frustrating. For some, it's scary. For some, it's exciting. For everyone, it seems more prevalent now than ever before. Whether you find ambiguity scary or exciting, we're here to tell you that you can learn ways to become more comfortable with it, and as leaders, you can help reduce the level of ambiguity on your team. Keep listening to learn how. Hello, Harmonious Workplaces listeners. We're in our 11th podcast today. Thanks for being here with us. And as usual, I'm Rich Cruz, and I'm here with our co-host, Cheryl Volpe. Hey, Cheryl.
Hi.
And Ben Kleinman. Hey, Ben.
Hey, everyone.
Just Ben.
I'm just Ben.
And today we're going to be talking about getting comfortable with the ambiguity. So in the work environment, the idea of being in a stable situation for your work life is a thing of the past, if it ever was truly a thing, right?
Yeah, if it ever, maybe that was a myth. I mean, most of us listening today probably were not in that world of working at a company for 30 or 40 years and getting a pension, and that's sort of all you knew. I would wager, though, that even in those types of environments, there was still some level of ambiguity or some level of uncertainty over the course of 30 or 40 years. Even if you're in the same role, stamping something on a machine line or what have you, There's always going to be new parts introduced or new ways of production, or are we going to expand into this and is this factory going to shut down, or are we going to try to develop a new kind of widget or whatever? There's always that stuff. So maybe it's just the concept of ambiguity has gotten a little bit of a refresh or an uplift in this day and age, because people need something to get all ginned up about. And
sure,
maybe it's a faster pace of change. Maybe it's just that people are more focused on how people respond to change, or they're aware that ambiguity can be a concern for their workforce. And so they're clued into how do we, can we help them? So those are all things that we'll talk about today, which is great. I don't think it's new, Rich, to agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And Cheryl, I'm sure in your roles in finance and especially in, oh, look at this. Yes, we have our new Harmonious Workplaces.
There you go.
Oh, we are official today. But I'm sure in finance and in especially in entertainment, there's probably a heck of a lot of ambiguity and not a whole lot of concrete ways of doing things, eh?
It's a major part of change, right? You cannot escape it. Not only are leaders often hoping for new ideas and innovation in that ambiguity, but they don't have everything figured out all the time. And there is an expectation that your team will adapt to those unknowing periods, right, or unknowing details when change is walking through the door.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
No, it's interesting too. Oh, sorry, Rich, go ahead.
Go ahead, Ben.
I was going to say in the finance world, in the healthcare world, you have so many things that are so heavily regulated. The idea that you could have something ambiguous, you know, there's so many heavy regulations with banking, investment banking, all of that. And same in many parts of the healthcare world. And yet people are still struggling with, I don't understand. This is new. This is different. I'm not clear on what I need to do. And so it's just this really interesting kind of mental dynamic of holding these two things in your head at the same time.
Right.
And maybe that's where people start to struggle a bit too.
Yeah. Right. And communication is key to that also, right? If
absolutely,
that is not, just like we were saying, it's a recurring theme in our episodes, that clear communication, even if that communication is we're heading into a period of unknowing.
That is right. Still or there's a new regulation that's coming down from the Fed. We don't know what the interest rate's going to be from the Fed. We don't know how country X is going to respond when we raise our expectations for this year. We know they're going to do something in response to our tariffs or whatever.
And it starts Monday.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And it's happened. We've seen that happen, you know. So we have these internal things that can happen, these internal forces that cause these change, which we've talked about, due processes and all that. Then you've got your mergers and acquisitions, that type of stuff, a pestle, anything political, economical, social, technology, legal, or environmental, any of those external things that can happen. They can really throw a monkey wrench in the works and leave everybody like, huh, what are we doing? Like, where are we going?
Yeah. And I just want to commend you, Rich, for not even 5 minutes in and we've already got our first acronym. So bravo.
And it rolled right out. You didn't even hesitate.
Hey, I have the class of marketing management at Trinity Christian College to thank for that, because it is alphabet soup every week talking to them. So, yeah, for sure. There's a ton of positions out there, right? Like, I mean, there 8.9 million job postings out there on all kinds of channels. And whether it's something in a startup, which of course has a lot of ambiguity, or something that's within a well-established company, I've been seeing so many and hearing from HR professionals and the like, so many job descriptions that have comfort with ambiguity in those descriptions. And Sherm was saying that culture fit is a big deciding factor in how people are going to be selected and how they're going to remain engaged within the workforce, right? And there's this term called googliness, which came out like 2018 or so, and it's how well people adhere to Google's value principles. And one of those is this comfort with ambiguity, right? Being comfortable with all of that. But it seems like, we're kind of setting people up to expect that we didn't really do our homework when we posted this job description, or we really didn't do our homework when we decided we're going to roll ahead with this type of thing, but at the same time, I guess, like we just said, ambiguity can rear its ugly head anywhere, right? So
do you think that, Rich, that's just laziness on the part of organizations that are posting job descriptions, or do you think it's some kind of a culturally accepted code for we need people who are going to be flexible and not super rigid in terms of how they approach a given task or a job, or we need people who are just going to be super chill and easygoing and kind of they'll come and handle things regardless of what's coming down the pike? Is it that kind of thing?
Personally, I think it depends. I think if you're in a startup, I think if you're in a situation where you're rolling out new products, or if you're, if you're in that type of situation and that type of role, yeah, that's going to have to be intentional, right? Whether it's an internal, an internal job posting or external one, I think that has to be intentional too. But when it comes to a lot of other positions that just say that, it could be a sign of, well, we really just don't know. So if we don't know, you shouldn't have to know either, and be comfortable with that, so that's kind of, it's the old IO psychology phrase, and probably OCM phrase too. It depends. We hear that all the time.
It depends. It should not be interpreted, though, as a catch-all for a disorganized tire fire, right? Yeah. Just to this word that we've latched onto from an article the three of us read. It should not be that. So it should indicate that a company is trying to be innovative, there will be periods where everyone will have to think outside the normal parameters of what is known and venture into what is not known. What is your risk tolerance? What is your disposition in those situations? Do you get frustrated when things aren't spelled out? You know, you probably ought not apply when you see that in a job description, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's almost teasing out some of those cultural traits or workplace traits, skill sets that one might want to have if they're going to apply to this position.
Sure. Which goes back to what Rich was saying a little bit there about culture fit as well, right? Those three words seem to indicate a huge ingredient to a particular culture or a work environment.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, really, when we talk about organizational change, we're talking about, in large part, changing a culture and having, it's almost like reintroducing the culture and almost rehiring everybody back into this thing, if you think about it, right? Because we made this kind of change, and it's like, well, are you in? Hopefully you are. Yeah, let's
roll ahead. That sounds like a whole different podcast right there.
It really does.
Sorry.
It's brilliant. I think that's another one that we could put a pin into. We already had the idea of crisis communications earlier this episode, and maybe that's another one. Sure. We're at about 10 or 11 minutes. And so what we've done, just to kind of recap, we've kind of set the stage for ambiguity being out there, ambiguity maybe being cultural laziness on the part of hiring organizations, maybe being a way for people to think about the skills that they should bring to the table when they want to join a company, if that's the role they want to take. We've talked about ambiguity maybe being a little bit of a constant, in that it's not a new thing anymore. Maybe it's just maybe that we're recognizing it more and calling it out more. What do we think about taking all that and then thinking about how do we reduce ambiguity? And so, Cheryl, I know you have some great ideas about how we can just frame it so that we say, okay, it's there. We're going to recognize it. Now let's try to maybe reduce the temperature a little bit and think about what we still can control and think about how we can move forward in a productive way, how we can, you know, unfire the tire fire, if that makes any sense. Do we want to go down that path?
Before we do that,
uh-huh.
One thing I'd like for you to do, Ben, if you could, because you put in the show notes or something that I think does help to put a little bit of clarity into this. Can you kind of define ambiguity for us?
Just a little
clearer.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so for me anyways, I feel like ambiguity can be a little bit of a jargony term, a little bit of a placeholder for essentially uncertainty, or when you have a situation where there's a larger amount of unknowns than usual, where maybe you're asked to do something, but it's not clear what good looks like at the end of it, or when you're not told exactly how to do something. So you know you have to produce a widget, or maybe you have to produce a new widget, but you don't know exactly how to do it or what it should look like at the very end. You're going to have to figure that out as you go. You don't necessarily know exactly how much time you have to produce this widget, or how much money you can spend to produce this widget, or how many other people you can involve to produce this widget. You just need to get something done. And so there's a lot of maybe uncertainty about that whole process. And sometimes people find that really, really exciting and liberating, and they can just own it. And other times people say, wow, that is so scary and frustrating, and I don't even know where to start, and I don't want to be wrong, and I don't want to spend so much effort going down the wrong path. And it's all of those things at once. And so that's, at least for me, are there other ways that y'all would think about describing that?
That was a great way of putting it, Ben. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Cool.
Agreed. Yeah. Sure. You really, really hit the nail on the head there.
Cool. So what do we do with all that then?
Sure. So there are fairly standard elements in just about every tip that you would read, my cat is not cooperating with me. She's not comfortable with the ambiguity that we're having right here.
Your cat just wants to be part of the show.
Yeah, she really does. So the first thing you are advised to do in any number of resources is when you're encountering this unknowing, you have to get organized. You have to create a visual, do a sketch, take notes, document everything that you do know.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And just try to scope that out first. The other thing that you would do is don't rush into anything. Take smaller steps, get quick feedback, the sort of fail fast, right? Get that feedback, adjust, but don't take any enormous launches into any one direction as you feel your way. Also, the emotional intelligence, this could be a whole nother podcast, but sort of check in with yourself and say, how am I reacting? Am I being counterproductive with my reaction? Am I like a deer in the headlights because of what I don't know? Can I just sit with myself and identify how I could handle this better?
Sure. Love that.
And those are pretty much the three easy to grasp tips. Create a visual, get yourself organized with what you do know, take tiny steps, get feedback in a quick loop, adjust as you go, as you wait.
I think that the last one you mentioned was also incredibly powerful and empowering, because you can say, well, I don't know what's going on. This might be not just a tire fire, but a full on dumpster fire. At least I can control how I respond to that. I can control how I react to that, how I behave. And maybe it takes me a few minutes or a few days or a few weeks, but I can get to a place where at least I control what I say to colleagues, how I behave in front of colleagues, how I respond when people bring me new information. And that in and of itself can be super empowering. And you can get to a point, Cheryl, where I think you were just saying, at least we know there's this thing there, and it may be a little bit crazy making, but that's there. The rest of our lives at work, anyways, we know we have a little more control or agency over. Now we can start addressing that tire fire.
And thank you for that summary. And the flip side of that expectation that you will have a comfort with ambiguity, with a hiring manager, with a leader, I would like to be in a position myself to say, in exchange for that comfort level that I'm going to have or develop or bring into the environment, will I then, this would be a great interview question, and hopefully you wouldn't lose the job with this question, but I think it would be fair. With the prevalence of this expectation in job descriptions, as we said earlier, more and more, I would like to know from a potential employer, will I then, in exchange for that comfort, have the psychological safety? Coming back to that, it has to go hand in hand in order to feel that empowerment. Will I have the time to get myself organized in that shadowy, unknowing period? Will I have the time to check in with myself? Will I have the trust of my team that we can sit and identify how this is making us feel? Is what I think I know, what everybody knows, you know, that exchange of information and that safety in that team?
That's great.
That is so great. And that is not at all where I thought you were going to go. I thought you were going to say, in exchange for being comfortable with ambiguity, whatever that means, will I have the agency? Will I have the authority to go buy a stapler or buy a pack of pens without having to run that up the chain and wait 6 weeks for approval for a pack of pens? Will I have the agency, the authority, the ability to be able to say, nope, this button's going to be green. I don't care. It's green. We're moving on. And in some ways that can help it be empowering. But I love that you say, well, I have the psychological safety. Well, I have that comfort, that time, that support to be a person, to be a human, to just digest all this.
Yeah. And that fosters the, that, you know, that place of feeling safe, to discuss these feelings that people are having and all that stuff, right? That goes a long way to, and there's research on this, that where people feel that they can contribute to the feedback loop that Cheryl just talked about, mm-hmm. right? So when you're able to do that, that improves one's self-confidence and their intrinsic motivation to continue on. When you don't have that, you're going to have people who feel stymied. They can't, they just can't move forward because they don't feel that they are safe enough to be able to do that, right? I mean, literally it goes back down to a, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of, you know, I don't feel safe. I gotta be there in order to keep moving, you know, keep moving forward. So, and then one of the other notes that I had here was that in that feedback, people are able to. So we talked about learning, you know, learning for to keep change going and to institute it, right? When we can allow that feedback to happen, the knowledge transfer from training and all of that tends to be retained and used, you know, on the job, because people are not, like I said, they're not afraid to fail as much, right? When so they fail fast, learn and keep moving forward. So yeah, very good.
I think that's so cool, because that psychological safety sets you up for a virtuous cycle. You're able to do that sort of analysis, Cheryl, that you talked about. You're able to do that fast loop of what's going on. How do I feel about it? Let's try something. Did it work? Great. Did it work? Nope. Okay. What do we learn from it? Can I contribute to that? How am I going through that loop in a better, more productive, faster, supported way that then just produces better results in the long run and a much more happier, harmonious workplace type of environment, if you will.
Yes.
Yes. That was perfect.
And that's brilliant. That's brilliant.
And those cycles have to be fast because you're taking smaller steps, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you need to move the project forward.
Right.
One thing that you said, Cheryl, that I loved, I mean, I really loved, was the visual part, like the visual storytelling part of things. And I have found that to be really clarifying for organizations when I talk about various. So for instance, I just thought about this. I was in this change, this OCM project, OD project that I've been working on, and I could not get people to understand why we were doing this. Like, you know, what's the system and how does all this work? And I like had to go into how can I make it so that they can understand it? So I started drawing, and people were like, oh, that's how it works. That goes together. I mean, you could just see that. So, you know, people learn in different ways. They communicate in different ways. So some are very auditory, you know, and they need that part of it. Some are very visual, whereas there's that, and some others are experiential, right? Where they have to actually, you know, that was another thing that came out of that meeting, was to remove some ambiguity about how to do one element of this software, right? To actually go in and do a demonstration one-on-one, you know. And so it's a little time consuming, but when that happened, I saw the light turn on. I was like, oh, that's how you do it, you know. So yeah, there's that visual component and the whole rich communication mix can really go a long way. So thanks for
cannot overestimate the value of the whiteboards in our production office when we were, you know, making MST3K. We had our own streaming platform, the Gizmoplex, which we fundraised for and had to build. And what was that programming going to be? How would we integrate the show with all the other features we wanted to build into the streaming platform? And the first time Joel and I were together and we were sort of stitching it on a whiteboard, it looked like a zipper. And we just clung to that. That was like such a great visual for us to refer to for the next 3 to 6 months, that we had to completely, as you know, all the talented people on the team to take something from, to make something from nothing, really. We had nothing to go on, and we had to. So, yeah.
Oh, man. Visuals.
Project Zipper. I love it.
Project Zipper. That's
awesome. Yeah, and then we could use it, you know, for the next 6 months. Well, the zipper. Well, the zipper. You know, the the zipper.
That's brilliant.
It was
brilliant. I love that. We maybe need to do a separate podcast on the visual, because Rich, I know one of your colleagues on LinkedIn had posted something about having a brainstorming session where different people would get a different color and each person would be responsible for, in that brainstorming session, adding their ideas or thoughts, but they'd have their own color. And it was a very interactive, very visual, very multicolored kind of a thing. And I think that was meant to stimulate a lot of that visualization, but also the hands-on, the experiential, and maybe tell that in a whole different podcast. So maybe that's something we could come back to too.
Sure. That'd be perfect.
Great idea.
Anything visual, sign me up.
Well, it's so much a component of storytelling in some ways, because with stories, even if you're just listening to a story in your head, most of us, I think, are painting that visual image. Mm-hmm. You know, when we hear about a story, we're imagining, what does that character look like? What does that scene look like? How does it display in my brain, right? And so there's something about that all, and that deserves its whole unpacking in a separate thing.
And that does fill in the pieces of where the ambiguity is too, that storytelling can help the whole team have the same vision.
It can sure, because you see, oh, we've got this half of the whiteboard pretty well zippered up, but then there's this whole other thing that's just like white space. Maybe we should think about putting some sticky notes there.
Sure yeah
cool,
awesome,
wonderful. We are probably at a good point to start summing up and start sharing some of our key takeaways. What we've done so far, we've kind of clarified a little bit about what ambiguity is and why it might be there. We've talked a little bit, Cheryl, in particular, you shared a little bit of a rubric in terms of how we can approach ambiguity, give a little bit of comfort in terms of helping people get used to seeing ambiguity and being comfortable with that. What are some of your key takeaways, if you had one or two things to sum up what you've learned or what you'd like to share or what people could do tomorrow?
Yeah,
I would like
to. Go ahead.
My main takeaway is that we know it's here to stay. We know that there is a lot of unknowing. We know that, you know, if nothing else, COVID showed us that things can be turned upside down practically overnight. And we got through it. And there was a lot of ambiguity with work from where, you know, and where what on our faces all the time and how many feet apart. So we got through that. And it's a lesson to us moving forward. Do not be afraid of what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And try to outline what you do know. And move through that with as many ideas and innovation, as much innovation as you can bring to the table. It's an opportunity. Mm-hmm. It's a feature, not a glitch.
There you go. Feature, not a glitch. That's perfect. And it's true. It is mm-hmm. something that is just, it's going to be there, and it is not, it's not a glitch. We do have to get comfortable with it. So I suppose, going back to that job description, I guess that there is some validity to that, huh? We really do kind of, no matter what we're doing, we do have to kind of understand that there's going to be something we don't know, and that's okay. So, and for me, in this podcast, I think of course, having that safe space and having the I shouldn't say safe space, but having the psychological safety right within the in the workplace to foster the communication and the feedback loop that people need in order to learn and feel like they can make those make mistakes and still be part of it and engage in the process.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Fail and land safely. So yeah. If you don't know everything, you cannot be afraid to fail.
That's right. Absolutely.
I love all of those. And I think the one thing that I would add to that is that as leaders of a company or a team, what's going to be most important is that you help create that environment where even if there is ambiguity, you help people realize that that is not the be all end all. That is not the only thing that defines this organization, this team, whatever, but that you are the one that can help set the table for that psychological safety. You are the one that can help set the table for realizing that ambiguity can be an opportunity. It's the feature, not a glitch type of approach. And you are the one, you have to take that responsibility to set the stage for others so that they can feel that, and that all of you can then be in that virtual cycle that we talked about of ambiguity leading to positivity or potential good outcomes, failing faster and knowing what you can control, what you know, and all that stuff. And I think my guess is that if people do all of these things we've talked about, they would realize that there's a lot more that's stable than there is uncertain. There's a lot more that's known and less scary than there is ambiguous and fraught with danger.
Absolutely.
Right. And the agency and self-efficacy that you earn, that you achieve through those cycles, it's powerful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, that about wraps it up, folks.
Fun ones.
This was great. I love my mornings with you.
Well, I think it's
my cup of Joe.
We eliminate the ambiguity by the
cup
end
of Joe. There you go, right here. I think if there's one thing that I would recommend to folks who are listening, you can clearly see that there's a ton of expertise here. And if you have questions about any of it, feel free to reach out. We're all here to help. And at least speaking for myself, happy to just bounce ideas without making a whole big thing of it. And we just want everyone to have that psychological safety at work. So find us, let us know what your questions are.
Yep.
If we totally gunked it up, let us know where we did.
We want your feedback. That's right. We want your feedback for sure. And you'll find us on all your major streaming platforms. And within the description, you'll find a way for to contact each of us. So thanks for joining us on Harmonious Workplaces. And we'll see everybody real soon.
Next time.
Thank Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Harmonious Workplaces. You can find Harmonious Workplaces on LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, Spotify, Amazon, Apple, and other streaming platforms. We'd love any feedback on whatever channel you find us on. Please rate, like, and share our podcast with your network. And remember to add Harmonious Workplaces to your list of favorites to get notified about each new episode. To contact Rich or Cheryl, please visit www.workbalanceconsulting.com. To connect with Ben, find him on LinkedIn or visit at www.harborsidestrategy.com.